Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, and especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. Free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant, broker, owner of United Country Real Estate, Land Pro. Buying or selling homes or land and farms in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, or Southern Virginia, just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our office is at 3349 Cook School Road in Pilot Mountain, North Carolina, Highway 52 across exit 136 across from Foothills Hardware and Building Supply. We share office space with Freedom Designs and Marketing for all your graphic needs. Our company website is www.mylandpro.com. A program note, Dr. Barbie Ask the Doctor show will follow this show and will air at 10 a.m. Our guest today is Will Hugan. He is with Asheville Associates in Orange, California, and we're going to be talking about land as an investment. Welcome, Will.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. And you're not in California. We're actually in Albuquerque, right?
We're in Albuquerque.
We came all this way just to have this talk show.
Well, we're actually at a land conference.
That's, I know. That's
the way we are. Sharing notes.
So just a little bit about your background. You graduated from Paradigm University and had a Bachelor's of Science in Certified Property Management, and then you got your Master's, or didn't get your Master's, but almost got your Master's at the University of Redlands. So from there, you got into property management, right?
Correct. And then property management, and then asset management, then brokerage.
And then brokerage. And how long have you been with Aswell? You're the partner with him, right?
I've been with Asheville Associates for 13 years.
And what do you guys do?
We're a small boutique firm that specializes in industrial and land in Orange County, Southern California.
Okay. So we're going to talk about land today. What do you want to tell us about it?
Well, first of all, everybody's heard this question. 90% of all millionaires made their money how? Well, the answer is real estate. But no one ever asked the next question. What type of real estate? Real wealth in the United States is made in land. In Orange County, for some of you who are familiar with it, we have the Irvine Company. The Irvine Company is a very wealthy, successful company, and their asset is land. And they sell land, and they turn around and buy more and develop stuff, and they have most of their portfolios owned free and clear. One of the most successful malls in Southern California is South Coast Plaza, which is all high-end stores.
Right.
The Seegerson family that owns South Coast Plaza used to be bean farmers.
And what?
They had agricultural land all around there,
right.
And they sold the land and built South Coast Plaza. Bob Hope, who was a very wealthy man, made all his money in land. And a lot
really?
Of people think that he made his money in land in the Palm Springs area.
Right.
That's not true. He made it in the San Fernando Valley,
huh.
Where when it was being developed. Land is a long-term patient money. People don't understand that.
What do you mean about that? What does that mean?
It means you want to buy land for the long term. You want to buy, ideally, it's better to pay cash for the land so you don't have any payments, so you just have to pay your real estate taxes. And you just hold on to it and let nature take its course. I tell young couples mm-hmm. that have young kids to buy two parcels of land, each one of their children's name. One, when they're under 5 years old, when they're 18 to 20 years old. One parcel can be used to sold, could be sold to pay for college.
Right.
The other parcel can be used when their daughter's a little older to pay for a wedding.
Okay.
I can tell you some funny stories. When I was in college, I was told that land is like an alligator. It takes up all your cash and gives you nothing back.
Right.
That's partly true. And that's the bad part. But here's the good part about land. When you have land, you have no tenants, you have no repairs, no maintenance, you don't care about fires, floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, you can't damage my land. The only thing you can do to my land is you can contaminate it or dump on it,
right.
Which doesn't happen very often. The nice thing about land, even if the market turns, you have a valuable asset. When I was younger, I had bought what I thought at the time was blue chip stock. I bought some General Motors stock. When General Motors went bankrupt, I lost my entire investment.
Right.
And had nothing. But at least with land, I have a tangible asset.
Sure.
That's always worth something.
Exactly.
Even when the market goes down, it doesn't go down to nothing.
It's the best investment there is. That's
the best investment. Now, the other thing that's about land that's really interesting, land is a very limited commodity. People don't realize this, but Many of the states, the government owns the majority of the land.
Or the federal government.
I'm talking about federal, state, whatever.
Okay, yeah.
I'll give you a couple of examples. The state of Nevada, I think 95% of the land is owned by the government.
Yes.
The state of Nevada, 88%. It was 90, it's starting to go down.
Right.
And you're going to say, well, how could that be? What's all this? Well, you start taking wild forest land, forest preserve land, military bases, government offices. It goes on and on and on. In Southern California, for example, Camp Pendleton, which has prime land on the ocean, they have thousands and thousands of acres between San Diego and Orange County. And there are military bases everywhere, and they take huge amounts of land. You have all kinds of other government uses that has land. And the other sad thing about it, every year, the government takes in more land. They either buy it or it's used for mitigation purposes. What that means is a lot of this land the government takes, you cannot go and use. You cannot take motorcycles or off-road vehicles. You're prohibited from using it. One of the reasons is there's a thing called bugs and bunnies. You don't want to damage or hurt the habitat for living animals or vegetation or growth. In Southern California, for example, we have lots of areas that have the desert tortoise or the three-toed lizard, and we also have the burrowing owl. These are areas that you cannot touch. So what developers have to do, they have to buy other land and donate it to the government so they can take these endangered species, either plant or animal life, and relocate them to these areas.
Sort of like wetland mitigation in a way.
But the sad thing about that is every year that means more land is taken away from the public and owned by the government. And not only is that a problem, but people aren't paying real estate taxes on the land that's going back to the government. So the government is losing income.
Losing money. I hate that.
And one of our biggest counties in the United States is San Bernardino County, which is in Southern California. San Bernardino County has lots of areas with tons of minerals on it. The minerals are not being mined or harvested or anything, and it's just waste. It's unfortunate because if they would just take some of this and have it processed or at least used for to extract the minerals, there could be a surplus. I've also said for the state of California, for example, that has a deficit. Our economy is a deficit. If we would sell just some of our land, we would have a surplus, and we would also be generating income taxes, real estate taxes. So it's really sad that you would think that land, in California, I don't know the true number, but between 60-80% of the land in California is owned by the government.
Oh.
It's huge. It's not as bad as Nevada or Alaska. But this is some of the stuff people don't realize.
Right.
Another example is if you're in Los Angeles and you're going to Las Vegas and you're on the way to Vegas, and once you pass Barstow, you see all this barren land that has thousands and thousands of cars going up to Vegas all the time. You say, why isn't it developed? The reason it's not developed is because it's owned by the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, which is government land.
Sure.
And if they would sell some of that land, now there are pockets of casinos and things, that's the only limited amounts of land that's privately owned.
But isn't that on reservations where that is?
No, it's not on reservations.
Okay.
And Indian land is another thing.
Sure, of course. It takes up a lot of...
takes a lot of land. So if you were to look at the BLM maps, I have a whole collection of BLM maps.
Okay, for the audience, what's a BLM map?
Pardon me?
For our audience, what is a BLM map?
BLM map is a Bureau of Land Management. It's a government agency that owns and controls land.
So if somebody was curious, they could just Google BLM?
Absolutely. BLM, and I would recommend that you try to look at BLM maps. I have maps that are large, 2 feet by 3 feet, for example, that shows all the parcels. The majority of the entire map is government-owned by the BLM. It's unbelievable. But going back to what I was saying about going to Vegas, all that land is mostly BLM land that if they would do some development there, just mainly commercial, they could create jobs, they could create industry, you could create taxes. I mean, it would just flourish.
Why isn't that happening?
Because BLM rarely sells land, and sometimes they lease it and sometimes they don't.
Right.
It's very hard. And to try to do a deal with the BLM could take as much as 5 years, and after 5 years, you don't know if you have a deal.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. One thing that I tell my clients that buy land, I tell them not to buy land in resort property.
Why?
And I'll tell you why. And by resort property, I mean like mountain property, lake property, mm-hmm. or for Southern California, we have this area called Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. The reason I tell them not to buy land in those areas is because usually those are second homes. When the market turns, the first thing that goes is your second home.
Yeah, like we just saw several years ago.
Exactly. I tell people to buy land in areas where the homes or the land is for primary homes, mm-hmm. where there's jobs, where there's industry, where there's growth
right.
and development. So you want to minimize your risk and exposure. People are not going to get rid of their primary homes.
Right.
But their secondary homes, gone.
Right.
I also tell people that I recommend buying land in rural land. What rural land is land that's not developed.
Like my market, that's my specialty in North Carolina and Southern Virginia.
So what rural land is land. It's land goes through several phases of development. The first phase is you buy land and you get preliminary entitlements. And then you get. I'm forgetting the words.
It's okay.
You go through the different stage of entitlements.
Right.
You subdivide the land, then you get your. Why am I missing
your permits or
no, but there's different phases.
You talk about creating a subdivision.
Yeah, but the first thing is
because you're a little different out west than we are. We don't maybe have the same phases.
So I'm glad you mentioned
yes.
that. No matter where you have land, you have to deal with different government agencies.
Not necessarily. And I'll tell you, I am. We have a 10-acre rule, and if you're dividing up a 20, 30, 50-acre tract of land, you don't have to go to anybody. But if you do less than that. Then you have to go before the planning board. If it's a minor subdivision, certain counties let you do up to 4 lots on the highway or 5 lots. Then you just go to the planning board director, and they can sign off on it. If you're doing a larger subdivision, lot subdivision, then you got to go through the whole process of the preliminaries and the public hearings and so on. Is that the same as it is
in
California?
You're saying exactly what I was trying to say. To
right.
No matter where your land is, you have to find out what the government agency's
exactly.
rules and regulations are.
And where do you find that out? You can pull a copy of the county subdivision ordinance because that's the rules of the game.
Well, you usually go to City Hall.
Yeah, but I'm saying, City Hall there, but they have subdivision ordinance.
Absolutely.
And it gets setbacks and curbs and gutters and this and those requirements. So, I tell my students when I teach, if you're going to play the game of land, just like if you've never played Monopoly, you go buy the Monopoly game, what's the first thing you do?
Buy real estate.
No, you read the rules.
Read the rules.
You got to open the box first.
Sure.
So if you're going to play the game of real estate, then, you need to know what the rules are. And those are your county or city. And, of course, you have state regs, too, that might be affected. But definitely county regs. And then if you're in an urban area, your county. And that's the rules that you have to follow. So we're talking with my good friend, Will Huron. And this is Let's Talk Land. Okay, so I'm talking to my good friend Will Huron about California land. Of course, it applies anywhere, right? It's not just California.
Absolutely. So when you have raw land goes through different phases. The first phase, you want to get a tentative map, then you want to get a final map, then you want to after you have a final map, then you want to get your blue top lots. What a tentative map is basically you take the land and you subdivide it and you show a map of the roads and the curbs and the gutters, and you get it, you break up a large parcel and make smaller parcels for development purposes.
Right.
That's called a tentative map.
Okay.
In order to take a raw land to a tentative map, you need to be able to show where the infrastructure is going to be coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You need to hire engineers. It costs a lot of money and takes a long time.
Sure.
Depending what community you're in, it could be a year to 5 years.
Yeah.
Once you have a tentative map, what you'll get instructions, what it takes to take it to a final map. And that's where you have to put in your curbs and gutters and
drainage and
everything else. That also takes a lot more money and a lot more time. Mm-hmm. Then once you have that done, you take what they call blue top lots, which means that you actually grade each parcel of land,
okay,
where you actually grade the actual pad where the prop, where the house is actually going to be built, and the pad is usually higher than the rest of the lot for drainage purposes.
Okay.
And that, again, takes time. Now, here's an interesting question. What is the difference between a builder and a developer? A developer is one that develops horizontally.
Okay.
And by that, he develops the land.
Right.
Once the land is developed, he sells it to a builder.
Or subordinates it.
Well, or subordinates. But usually you have land developers that mm-hmm. sell to builders.
Right.
Builders build horizontally.
Right.
No, vertically. Developers horizontally, builders vertically. Some builders also do development. Some builders do land and development. Usually it's one or the other. The reason is there's more risk in developing land. There's more cost. It takes more time. And usually your big public builders like Lennar and some others, they're what they call merchant builders,
mm-hmm.
and they have to turn inventory. They have to build in order to meet the profits for the investors.
Right. And that's all speculative, too, because the market could turn
absolutely
like it did. And I was told during the downturn in Atlanta, the greater Atlanta area, that there was enough inventory for about 15 years before any other development had to be built, because it just wasn't anybody buying homes, and it had been, you know, over-speculated. And that's what happens.
We go in different real estate cycles. But what I want to emphasize is raw land goes into the different steps. Every time you take it from a raw land to a development to a tentative map, the value of the land goes up.
Right.
When you take it from a tentative to final map, the value of the land
more.
Goes up even
right.
more. However, in order to do each step, it takes a lot of money. You have to hire engineers and all kinds of other consultants, and you have to get all kinds of fees to the city.
Right.
And that takes time. Like I mentioned earlier, in some areas, I've seen it as low as 1 year. In some other areas, like there's an area in Southern California called Temecula,
mm-hmm.
which is now becoming a wine region.
Right.
It could take 5 years to go through the entitlement process.
Well, I've done over 60 subdivisions. I don't know the exact number, but at least that or more. And I've done two, which were lot subdivisions, that took at least 2 years from the time we started. And I call it MGO during that phase until you get everything signed off on, and you put the real estate sign up, and you can start selling, and that's when you get MCI, money coming in. And you got to have some deep pockets. I mean, it's interest. It's you're just laying money out. But when you do the 10-acre in our area specifically, and it's different around the country, I don't go to anyone. I just go, I can break it up on paper and sell it and have the surveyor come in there and cut it out and close it.
So I want to go back to what we said earlier.
Please.
Each city, each county has different requirements. You have to look at your zoning and your codes for
right.
your particular property. In the Victor Valley area, which is outside of Los Angeles, they have a minimum lot size of 7,200 feet.
Oh,
you go to Apple Valley, which is this town right next to Victorville,
mm-hmm.
the minimum lot size is half acre. You go to some other remote areas, it could be 5-acre, 10-acre minimum lot
right.
size per residence.
Right.
So the more lots you can put on an acre is called density.
Of course.
So the rule of thumb for a 7,200-foot lot, you can get 4.3 lots per acre. Now, you're going to say, well, 4.3 lots, like 30,000 square feet, and you have 43,560 square feet in an acre. Well, yeah, but you have to allow for roads, curbs,
right.
and gutters.
Right.
So you have a lot that's gross feet and net feet.
And then you got your setback requirements,
your setback
too.
Requirements on top of that, correct.
Right.
But you still own the land, even the setback.
Sure, I understand. You pay taxes on it.
And you pay taxes on
right.
it. You're correct. Then the other thing you need to be concerned about is, do you have CCNRs?
Translate.
Restrictions, conditions, and covenants, which
okay.
means restrictions, what you can do. And there could be several different CCNRs. Now,
mm-hmm.
what CCNRs, it's not just a matter of having the rules and regulations that you have to comply with, but you have different fees to pay. Now, you could have two or three different sets of CCNRs in a development.
Right.
You could
You're talking about like homeowners association fees or common area fees and insurance.
Correct.
And
so you can have, like, suppose there's a lake
okay.
or a park.
Right.
You can have some CCNRs to pay for part of the lake, part of the park. And then you have another CC&Rs for the actual track where your house is.
Sure.
And those all add up. Now, most cities today don't have resources to pay for infrastructure. So the way developers and cities do that, they have mellow roofs or bonds. Basically, it's a set of bonds that are paid, put on the property,
right.
So the developer doesn't pay for it and the city doesn't pay for it, but the owner of the property has to pay it back in special assessments on top of their real estate taxes.
Boy.
And that's how these are getting financed, because the cities and developers don't have it.
Does the developer have to cede that at all?
No. It's all done by
bond
prices,
right.
Securities.
So you got a mortgage payment, and you got all these assessments, and then you got the bond assessment. I mean, my Lord.
Right. So that leads me to another comment.
Okay.
Taxes in each state is handled differently. Mm-hmm. In California, for example, we have a thing called Prop 13, which
right.
says that your real estate taxes are 1% of your sales price, plus the special assessments. And the special assessments could be for your school tax, your fire department,
right.
police department, and the mellow roofs and the bonds. So your 1% that's supposed to be could be with bonds and mellow roofs and all the other charges. They're called special assessments.
Right.
It could be 2 and 3% of your real estate taxes. Now,
right.
the good thing of your purchase price, but in California, the way taxes are done, your real estate taxes go up 2% a year. In
no
other
matter
state,
what.
No matter what. 2% of the tax amount. But in other states, they don't use that. They reassess the property every 2 years,
right.
and your taxes can go up.
Right.
The reason in California they did Prop 13 is older people could no longer afford to live in their houses because they were taxed out of their
houses. Yeah, right.
So it's unfortunate some other states don't have this tax basis, because, you know, the nice thing about it is California, it's expensive to buy real estate, but once you're in, you're locked in your taxes
sure.
with a small increase every year. It's unfortunate that cities don't have these resources. One thing that California did have was redevelopment agencies,
mm-hmm.
which means that land was owned by the city and they helped developers and builders develop the land by giving them special tax breaks.
Okay. Well,
the governor of California took that away. I think other states have other similar redevelopment agencies to help builders and development, help spur growth and
mm-hmm.
development. Now, here's an interesting question I ask my clients that buy rural land.
Mm-hmm.
What would you rather own, residential land or commercial land?
Interesting.
And most people automatically say, well, I definitely want commercial land.
Why?
It's the wrong answer.
Okay, tell us why.
And I'll tell you why. In a 10-year span, commercial land will be worth more than residential land. However, in a 10-year span, you could probably flip the residential land 2 or 3 times, and every time you flip it, you can make a profit and buy more land and flip it. So you'll make more money on the residential land. The other thing, the different levels of development go in this order. The first thing you do is you build rooftops
mm-hmm.
or homes.
Right.
Once there's enough density and enough rooftops, then the next level of development is then when you have to support, so you know, grocery stores and gas stations to support the residential rooftops.
Right.
Once you have residential, once you have retail, then the next step to develop is office and industrial to support the retail.
Right.
And those are different development stages.
And some of those can be in one development.
Absolutely.
Right, which we see. What's that called now? That
master
type of development?
Master plan communities.
Master plan communities, right.
So there's a
and I think those were started somewhere back in the 30s was when they were first started in California. Well, I asked the question today to someone that seemed to know the answer, and that's what I remember him saying.
So one thing on master plan communities, there's a company called the Lewis Company that's a client of mine that I sold them land.
Right.
What they do is they buy large blocks of land.
What do you consider, 1,000 acres?
Five? No, I'm talking about 10,000 acres.
And you can find that?
Yes.
Without assembling?
Well, no, there's assembly.
Okay.
Because I was hired by this company for doing
assembly. Right,
assemblies.
I'm saying.
Yeah, and I'll talk about assembly.
Yeah,
too.
I want to.
Because that's a different specialty and a different
Absolutely.
Niche.
Absolutely.
But so what they do is they take large parts of land, they do a master plan development, they lay out all the retail and all the residential, they sell all the residential and keep all the retail, develop the retail to themselves. Now, by buying this large land and selling the residential not only pays for all the land, because we said earlier, once you develop the land, it's worth more.
Right.
And it pays for everything, so they end up with the retail land free and clear.
Wow.
And then they develop, they keep the retail, and they buy, the money they make, they buy more large parcel of money. But again, as I said, real wealth in the United States is made in land development, and this is a classic example.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to give you an illustration, you've seen a lot of malls. Malls, the way typical mall developers work, and I can give you some examples in Southern California because this is where I live.
Of course.
There's a mall called South Coast Plaza, and there's also one called Fashion Island. Fashion Island is owned by the Irvine Company. If you look at it, they took a large parcel of land, they subdivided the center for retail and all the perimeter for office buildings.
Right.
They developed it all. They sold all the land for office buildings, kept the retail, and the land for the retail for the office buildings paid for all the land for the retail, and they built the retail free and clear.
Wow.
Which is a common thing. So when you see a mall and you see the mall in the center and the road around it is called a ring road.
Right.
And those are built by developers. That's a development process. And there's a lot of malls around the country that are built like that.
But aren't the malls going the other way because of internet retail?
Yes. Retail is going through transition.
So what would be a transition of those malls? I mean, tear them down or just, is there other uses for them?
We're seeing mixed-use development.
Okay. Explain what that is.
Mixed-use is where you have both residential and retail development.
In that mall space.
In that mall space. So, as we know, Sears went bankrupt.
Right.
Sears sold.
Tons of inventory.
Tons of inventory. In Santa Monica, the Sears store is being converted to residential development.
Very interesting.
And they're going to be able to feed off the retail. And what a lot of retail today, the typical mom-and-pop retail concept is gone.
Right.
Your shoe store is gone.
Sure.
Your stationery store is gone. Now it's Home Office Depot. Your hardware store is gone. It's either Lowe's or Home Depot. So your typical dress shop, shoe store, mom and pop is gone. What you see in shopping centers and retail today is service industries. You're seeing more shoe repair, beauty salons, haircut places. Real estate offices, which I don't think is a good use for a retail center because it monopolizes your parking.
Right.
But that's another story. Pet shops. Pet shops even change in California. In California, you are no longer allowed to sell dogs in a pet store unless they're rescue animals.
Wow.
Because they don't want the puppy mills. But so shopping centers are more service-orientated, and you are correct. The internet and online shopping has grown. So it's hurt the shopping centers, but it's really helped the industrial.
It's sort of like NAFTA. It closed a lot of plants around, but now they've been transitionalized into apartments and condominiums and so on, too. So
in Southern California, the strongest segment of real estate is industrial real estate.
Yeah.
We have parts of industrial markets that have less than a 0.3% vacancy factor.
Wow.
The reason is, especially your big boxes, and I'm talking 500 to a million square feet, get gobbled up by Amazon and some other distribution companies. In the Inland Empire, where raw land is still some available.
Sure.
Builders and developers are building millions and millions of square feet of big boxes for distribution and warehousing.
For Walmarts and CVS's and
everybody. And the builders are building on spec basis. Before they're finished being built, they're either leased or sold. So building them on spec, unless it's a build-to-suit, and we're talking millions square feet. Amazon has several million square feet of buildings.
Crazy.
And they keep on growing and expanding.
Yeah, amazing. our guest today is Will Hugan, and this is Let's Talk Land. We're back with our friend Will Hugan from Orange, California.
So a lot of people say, how do you make money in land? Well, we discussed earlier different stages of land development, and we discussed buying land and waiting for the long hold for long term. We just talked about buying land in your retirement account.
Right.
Now, personally, for a small investor, and I'm talking an investor that buys small parcel of land of an acre, 5 acres, 10 acres, I don't recommend going through the entitlement process because it's costly and it's timely and it's a lot of red tape. And unless you know what you're doing, it's not advisable. However, the way you buy land in areas that are growing and developing where other developers are already putting in infrastructure, and you want to piggyback on their development.
Yeah, so if you know the direction people are going, go and buy land. Somebody famous said that,
where
like Will Rogers.
Industries are going, you want to buy land where there's jobs, where there's industry, where there's growth. You want to. Now, another way that one thing that's really unique about land investors, they're different than other type of real estate investors.
Right.
And people have a tendency to follow a particular niche. I'll give you an example. Some land investors like to buy discounted notes. The way land is typically sold, you can't get financing on land. It's very difficult. So land is either sold all cash or seller-backed carry financing. When I sell land, I typically sell cash, or a buyer will put 20 to 30% down and pay interest only for 5 years with no prepayment penalty.
And a balloon note.
And a balloon note. I also recommend that when you buy land, always go through title and escrow.
Right.
Don't file a land contract, because I could tell you some horror stories, which I'll share with you.
What's the land contract?
A land contract is basically where the seller's carrying a note, the deed is not recorded.
Right.
You have no title insurance. So when I was doing land assemblage for this client, I bought land. I was representing the buyer, my developer, who was buying land that from a guy that bought it on a land contract. He had paid his land contract. However, who he bought the land from still had a note on it.
Hadn't been canceled.
Hadn't been canceled, and so we couldn't close the escrow. It took a year to get the thing resolved, and it took a lot of legal fees. Right. It was a legal mess. So always go through a title company, get title insurance, do it right. Don't take the risk.
Let me ask you a question. And this is going to vary from state to state, area to area. What would you say is a minimum amount of dollars just to invest in land? Can you buy land for $5,000 that's going to make you money? Or do you have to spend $50,000?
I would say you can find rare instances $5,000, but I would say start at least with $10,000.
Okay. And what would you get for $10,000? Probably
an
a lot.
Or two.
And a lot subdivision, probably.
Yeah, you could buy lots, and I don't recommend buying lots. I think you're better off buying acreage.
Yes. But that would take more than $10,000.
No, you could buy
And I'm not talking about financing beyond that. I'm talking about $10,000 in cash minimum.
I agree.
Okay.
$10,000 in cash to buy land. So here's another concept where certain land investors like a particular niche. And one niche that's real common, especially with older people, they buy a large parcel of land, they cut it up in small parcels, and then they sell it, the parcels, and they carry the financing. And like I said, 20 to 30% down, and carry the note for 5 years, say 6, 7% interest. And if the person defaults, they get the property back.
Yeah, there's no risk in it.
There's no risk. They get the property back, and meanwhile, they keep the down payment and all the payments they made. They resell it, and they make a lot of money that way.
And you can also put covenants on it, too, or you can't do this, you know, it's to protect the value of the land during that process. And once it's paid off, then those can
be. Well, one thing that I always do is I put a due on sale clause, which means that if they sell the property, the note's got to be paid off.
Right.
These are all things to protect.
Sure.
But the point I want to make is, if you buy a large parcel of land, sell it, and sell all the parcels, the down payment you received usually pays for the entire parcel of land, so the notes are all yours free and clear.
Right.
And if they default, you take the property back, and there's a
go
lot
sell
of
it
older
again.
People. So you say, well, there's no cash, no money to be made, and there's no cash flow. Well, that's not true. You can. The other thing that's really important to note, when you have a parcel of land and you sell it, you can 1031 or defer your taxes and buy income-producing property. I have done it myself.
Right.
I sold land and bought income-producing property.
And by the way, for our listeners, I've done several shows on 1031 like-kind exchange, so I don't want to take your precious time and go into what that is. So check out
the
show.
But there are a couple of rules you need to know. It has to be like-for-like or income-producing property.
Right.
And basically what that means, it can't be your primary home.
Right, with the new tax laws, they changed a lot and took away the personal property. So.
Yeah, you can't exchange cars or equipment.
Well,
or
you could before certain things, airplanes and jewelry.
So you want to the IRS laws does not tell you how long you have to hold on your the property before you can flip it, but the CPAs will usually tell you to keep it at 12 months or two different tax years.
Right.
And the other thing, you can keep on exchanging for forever.
Oh, sure.
And then when your kids inherit the property, they get a step-up in basis, and they defer the capital gains, and you're fine.
What else is Wise Land's best investment?
The reason land is best investment is a finite amount of it.
Right. And well, they're making some in Hawaii and a few places. It just takes a long time.
Not quite.
They're called volcanoes.
Volcanoes, yeah. But a lot of people feel very comfortable in that niche of selling land, carrying the paper. You also defer your capital gains.
Right.
It has a different tax consequences. Right. And a lot of people feel comfortable receiving monthly checks.
Yeah, it's mailbox money.
Mailbox money, but you know that if you have several of these, it adds up to.
You need a bigger mailbox.
It's the best retirement plan.
Sure.
And there's no management.
Right.
You don't have to worry about tenants and repairs and maintenance or any of that stuff by just carrying the paper.
Right.
So there's some real advantages. So I want to tell a funny war story.
War story? This is like World War One when you or two.
This is when I went to college.
Gotcha. That was Vietnam then.
I'm a senior citizen.
That was being Vietnam era then.
So. I took a real estate class, and the professor said, you really need to buy land at tax auctions, where if you don't pay your real estate taxes...
Sure, it's foreclosed on.
It's foreclosed, and the government takes it and resells your land.
Right.
And in those days, we didn't have computers. We had big books.
Sure.
So we needed to go physically look at the property, which I did.
And you didn't have really good mapping sources and other tools like we have today.
Technology and due diligence was a different process. So the guy, I went to the auction, I did my research, had the book, and usually a lot of people redeem their taxes, so a lot of parcels are no longer for sale.
Right.
I walked into the auction late, and I heard the number of parcel I wanted. What I did not hear, there was a letter after it. And there was only like a dozen properties in the whole auction of hundreds that had a letter after it. I ended up buying a piece of property.
That you didn't think you were buying.
Correct.
Oh, my gosh.
And I bought it near Occidental College near downtown L.A.
Right.
What I ended up buying was a piece of landlocked property, which means that I did not have access to
the
property. And the parcel of property was 3.47 feet by 9.97 feet, say 3.5 by 10 feet.
Right.
That I couldn't bear. I couldn't even bury myself because it's not zoned.
Okay.
I couldn't bury myself on it. So this was all new experience. I was a college kid, and I figured, you know what? I'm going to
great beginning
property.
Lesson,
I'm going to
right?
own real estate free and clear.
Yeah.
How many college kids have owned free and clear?
I don't know. That we might have our audience call in and tell us.
So, it gets more interesting. There's a thing I didn't know anything about. It's called weed abatement. What weed abatement is every year the fire department will send you a notice saying that you need to clear the weeds on your property because
right.
it's a fire hazard.
Sure.
So, being a young, cocky college student, I get a notice from the fire department. I need to clear my weeds. I physically went to the fire department with my notice. And I said, if you could show me where my 3.5 feet is on this field here.
Right.
He says, no, we don't do it. So don't worry about it. So every year I got my notice, and I usually...
pay your taxes.
I had to pay my taxes.
Sure.
So here's another funny story about that. I mentioned Prop 13. That was they changed the tax laws.
Right.
I bought this property prior to Prop 13. When Prop 13 came about, I got a letter from the assessor and said, your tax bill is so low, it costs us more to process your tax bill, so we're not going to bill you this year.
Oh, my gosh.
So I got 1 year free.
Yeah.
So after a while, I started getting these notices for weed abatement from the fire department, and if I didn't clean it, they would clean it myself and charge
you, sure. Thank you.
So... I finally got really upset. So how do you sell property? Well, the rule number one for any broker to sell property is you contact your neighbors.
Absolutely.
I contacted all my neighbors. No one was interested in buying my parcel of land.
Still landlocked.
So years later, I did the same letter again, and I finally got a nibble, and I said, look, just make me an offer of whatever you want.
Right.
The lady goes, you know, my clothesline is on your property.
Oh, my gosh.
I finally sold the property for $500.
What'd you pay for it?
I paid $35 for this property.
Well, you made a nice profit.
less the taxes and stuff.
Because I had it for so long, and I had taxes and weed and everything else. I had lost money.
Yeah.
But I was glad to get rid of it.
What an experience.
It was an experience.
I'm surprised it didn't taint you. Like, I don't want to ever do this again. You know, some people, they do. They have a bad experience, and they don't want to put their toe back in the water.
As a land broker and as a land investor, I made a lot of money in land.
Right.
Both as a broker and as an investor. However, there's always, even Donald Trump, who's a multi-billionaire, has made some bad investments.
Sure.
So
can't be 100% right all the time. I've made a few myself.
But I've made more money, even after taking out my losses, than dollars ahead.
Sure.
So I know that I'll make more.
It's better than going to the casino. The odds are better, right?
Absolutely. I don't gamble.
I don't either.
But I've made a lot of money in land as a broker and as an investor. And some of my investments paid off, some I lost money, but overall I've made a lot of money, dollars ahead. So I really recommend not to get discouraged. Even if you buy stocks and bonds, you're going to have some losers.
Right.
I still think stocks and bonds is the wrong way to go.
Right.
But buying land for the long term in your retirement account and not play developer, buy land in areas that are growing and expanding where other developers are putting infrastructure, you will do very well in the long run.
You know, you see these companies, this happened for a long time, where they sell desert land for $500 or $1,000, even today.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe you live in Florida or New York or California. Would you advise somebody, if they're going to make an investment in land, that they try to make an investment in land that's commutable to where they live so they can at least visit it once in a while and kind of know the market, you know, and anticipate?
Well, there's no question knowledge is power.
Right.
The more you know about an area, the more knowledgeable you are, the better off you can
be.
One thing I do want to emphasize, I want to make sure that anybody that buys any type of real estate, especially land, goes and physically looks at it before they buy it.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of people at land auctions that buy land that don't know what they're buying, even if they get title insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen land auctions where it's a mountain, or it's a cliff, a riverbed, stuff you can't, a wash, you can't do anything with it. Don't make that mistake. Physically go look at it. Talk to consultants. Talk to brokers.
Well,
here's another thing that's really important that people don't realize. Always have a broker represent you.
That was going to be my point, but not just a real estate broker.
A land broker. But number one, people don't understand. You want someone representing you, looking out for your interest.
Right.
You don't. It doesn't cost you anything. The seller pays the commission.
That's right. Comes off the top.
Why would you not have someone represent you, look out for your interest, that knows what they're talking about, advise you, do the homework, do the preliminary stuff, do the due diligence. Due diligence is the process of researching the property before you buy it.
Yeah, that's why we're members of the Realtors Land Institute, and we've gone through the courses and learned, and we've become designated as accredited land consultants. And I think there's about 504. I think they graduated 38 today, so there's probably about 550 in the United States. We're a small group, but we're specialists. And even our members that aren't ALCs, at least they're getting land education training, because it just isn't taught in real estate school, just very little in the syllabus.
So always have someone looking out for your interest. Get professional help. Do your homework. Do your research. Buy in areas that are growing and expanding. Now, I will tell you that I have sold land in very remote areas, which is not the land I recommend buying.
Right.
And I'll tell you who I sold it to. I sold it for hunting.
Right, recreational land.
Recreational land. I sold it to a guy that was taking clippings mm-hmm. and making mulch out of it and mm-hmm. selling it to Home Depot, reprocessing stuff. I sold it to guys. I did solar farm land assemblage in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
And...
But you had to have a substation near it, right?
Well, we could talk about solar.
Yeah, now I did a show on that too. So go to the podcast to do oil and gas and water and solar.
Yeah. One thing I do want to mention that's really important. Whenever you buy anything, always have an exit strategy.
Absolutely. I tell people it's not buying, it's selling.
You make your money on the sale.
That's right.
But you really make your money when you buy.
That's
how you make.
Yeah, you got to buy it right.
So
that's been my philosophy.
Who do you sell these parcels of land to? Suppose you have land that's really in a rural area that's not designated to be annexed by a city. By the way, I want to talk about that.
Yeah, marketing.
County land is land that's not owned by a city. It's not incorporated.
Right.
When cities expand, they grow, they annex land, which means they take county land and make it part of the city to make it city land. Every time you do that, the value of the land goes up.
Sure.
That's another way of buying land. You want to buy in an area that's called the sphere of influence, which means it's the area that's going to be ultimately...
We call it ETJ, extraterritorial jurisdictions, yeah, in our area, but it's the same thing.
Same concept. Land that's going to ultimately be part of the city.
Right.
When you do that, the value of the land goes up. Now, there's a lot of people that don't like their land annexed. The reason they don't like it annexed, like everything, there's pros and cons. Usually the taxes will go up,
right,
but the reason it'll go up is you're paying for a fire department, a police department, school district.
Water and sewer.
Right.
The sewer is about 90% of utilities because lift stations, and maybe not in flat areas, but then, you know, we got topography and terrain.
So part of my background, as I mentioned, I was an asset manager, and I worked for CalFed, and I worked for Citicorp.
Okay.
And I worked for Citicorp. I represented offshore investors that had real estate in the United States. In China, all land is owned by the government.
Right.
You cannot own land.
Right.
In Japan, which is an island, which is limited, most land is not sold, but given from generation to generation in the family.
Right.
So Asians love land.
Yeah, especially California.
Especially California. And the reason they like it is because they can own it. In the United States, it's pretty generous,
yeah,
with foreign investors.
We are.
Foreign investors can buy land and own it in the United States with no problem. When I represented offshore investors when I worked for Citicorp, I had one particular client that was from India, and he did sportswear manufacturing in India, and he had an office building in Seattle that I oversaw. He had some silk mills in Osaka, Japan, and he would never talk to me while I was in India. He had to go out of the country to talk to me, and I asked him, why are you investing in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
He said, the reason I invest in the United States is you have a stable economy, a stable government, the value of land is never going to go to zero,
right,
you have a demand for it, and if all goes to hell in my own country, I can leave the country and I have an asset in a foreign country. Also, it's a good investment for my kids and my family.
Sure.
So there's a lot of land owned in different parts of the country by foreigners and a lot of Asians because, A, they can buy it and they can't in their own country.
But also they've done their homework and they know the value plan.
Correct.
Know.
And land will go up in time.
Of course it will. Supply and demand. Population increases. I mean, it's just, it always has, it always will.
The other thing that, as we mentioned earlier, land, even though most states have a finite amount of land that you can actually purchase.
Sure.
So it's the old supply and demand.
Exactly.
Demand, no supply, the price goes up.
Right.
So I am trying to cater to the foreign market to sell some of the land that I personally own. In China right now, if you're going to deal with the Chinese, it's really important that you make sure that the Chinese investor has the money on the continent, not in China bringing it in, because they have a hard time leaving the country.
So you have proof of funds requirement.
Proof of funds in the United States.
That's what I'm saying, but it's, yeah, sure.
You know, they can give you proof of funds in China, which isn't even good. There are ways for them to take the money out of the country. By the way, China right now, they can only take $50,000 a year per person out of the country.
Hmm.
So what a lot of Chinese are doing, they're pooling the money to buy property.
Right.
The other ways the Chinese can do it, they take it from China to Singapore or China to Taiwan and then bring it here. It's got to go through a few different steps.
Gotcha.
Again, I've been burned on deals where I thought where they had the money, but it was in China. They couldn't get it out of the country, and the deal didn't go through.
Right.
So make sure that, you know, they have the money on the continent as your party reactive strategy. But that is an excellent source of selling land is to foreign investors. Now, the next thing you do is, okay, well, how do you find these foreign investors?
Right.
Well, you deal with Asian brokers,
mm-hmm,
or you'd have your title company give you a search, tell you who all the owners are around your property.
Okay.
And you try to sell your property to people that already own land close to your property.
Okay.
If they've already bought it once, they might buy it again.
Sure. Yeah, there's a good chance of that.
Good chance of that.
Right.
So there's always ways, and I would recommend using a broker that knows what he's doing in that
right
area so you don't have to hassle.
So that's kind of the flip side of assemblage. Because, you know, assemblage is you buy a parcel, but you need more.
Right.
And that's called assembly, and a third parcel assembly, fourth parcel, to create a, you know, five parcel tract of land.
So let's talk about assemblage. I've done a fair amount of assemblage. Assemblage is a science, and it's an art, and it's a skill.
Right.
So when I was doing land assemblage, I would contact these owners, and I said, I want to buy your land. And most of the property that I was buying when I did my assemblage was non-listed property, mm-hmm. people that have owned land.
Or an absentee owners.
Absentee owners and
estate sales.
Estate sales.
A divorce is another
source. Divorce is another one. But there's a lot of people that own land out of state that they inherited the property.
Exactly.
Really
don't want it.
Don't want it. They're called don't wanters. So I would always say, hey, look, I'd like to buy your land. And the way I would buy it is twofold.
Okay.
I would offer them a cash price and a low price. And they said, no, I want more money.
Okay.
Okay, fine.
Give them a structured deal.
So what I would try to do, I would try to close as many deals as I can for all cash at mm-hmm. a low price because I'm creating my own market.
Right.
I'm trading my own comps.
Sure.
Then if someone wanted more money, I said, okay, fine, I'll give you more money, but it's going to take a longer escrow, and I'll give you 20% down, and you carry the paper. And that's how, and I needed that to assemble my pieces.
Right. But
I take an average of the high price, low price to come up with my own price. But on paper, they only saw the low prices because right. I try to comment.
Those are the comps, yeah.
You created
your own comps or comparables.
So there's a lot of people don't understand that.
Right.
And they go hog wild and go buy everything they can at a high price, and it doesn't work. So in all properties, when you do your due diligence, you want to make sure that not only do you physically look at your property, that you're not under wash or anything else, you want to make sure that you have a preliminary title report. You want to make sure there's nothing owed against it.
Right.
And that there's no liens, like government IRS liens or losses.
Or mineral rights that's been sold off.
Well, mineral rights is a different story. Sometimes you buy land with mineral rights, sometimes without mineral rights.
Right.
I was lucky. I sold an office building in Texas near the Eagle Ford Shale Reserve. And I was able to sell the property and keep the mineral rights, which I was shocked.
Yeah, really?
And I actually sold the property to the county assessor.
Wow.
So I own mineral rights in Texas.
Right.
Where the Eagle Ford Shale Reserve is. Now, I don't know if I'll ever see any money out of it.
Sure.
But I own it. It's an asset.
There you go. Well, you have to pay taxes on that?
On the mineral rights, no.
No. I never knew that because we don't have it in our area. So I'd never thought about it until talking to you.
No, they don't pay taxes on mineral rights.
Right.
Because it's not producing anything.
Interesting. So why is land a good investment?
First of all, you can get in with a minimal amount of money. It's a tangible asset. You have a limited supply. And there's a lot of things you can do with it once you own it. You can sell it. You can use it. You can go park your RV on it. And it usually appreciates.
Right.
And you could start off with a small amount of investment. The other thing, as I mentioned earlier, you could have it in your retirement account, which is long-term patient money.
Right.
And you don't have to manage it. There's no management. There's no headaches. There's no hassles about it.
So another way of funding, okay, is if you say I have a company IRA, you can actually take that IRA and transfer it. And there are only a few companies that do this. Transfer it into a self-direct and then buy real estate with that self-direct.
So
it has to be managed, though.
Let's talk about that.
And there's some caveats to it.
Yes. So most people think of buying, this is really a sore subject. A lot of stockbrokers have self-directed IRAs or SEPs or Roths.
Right.
You do not want to set up SEP or IRA or Roth through a stockbroker. You want to use an intermediary or an accommodator that handles self-directed, where you can buy anything.
Right.
Now, I have bought in my self-directed IRA land, notes, REITs. I have different investments. But it was self-directed, and I was not limited to securities because
sure.
I didn't go through a stockbroker.
Exactly.
Now, one thing that really...
That's a good point. People don't know a lot about that.
No, they don't understand that. One thing that really bothers me, when you have a self-directed through a stockbroker, they say, well, we'll diversify your portfolio. We'll buy different types of stock. That is misleading because if the market goes down, all stocks go down.
Right.
So diversification, that's another thing. Why buy land? It's a good form of diversification.
Absolutely.
So
let me ask you this question, kind of in what percentage of your portfolio should be in land investments?
That's a great question. I'd say at least 10%.
Okay.
And I also think buying land is good. Everybody should have a little land and diversify it.
Sure.
Because, A, it's long-term, doesn't produce any income, but it will grow in the long term. So I think everybody should have a little land in their portfolio, and I don't think anybody should have all the eggs in one basket in any type of investment, right, including stocks and bonds.
Sure. And if you're owning multiple pieces of land, maybe it shouldn't be in the same area. You should speculate in different areas.
Geographic areas.
If you're, right?
Yeah.
So what do you want to leave? We only got a few minutes left here. Give me three things you want to leave the listening audience with, to take away from our conversation today.
Well, number one, I think it's a good vehicle, good investment for retirement money. I think it's a good vehicle to fund college and weddings,
right,
for kids. And I think it's a good passive investment vehicle where you don't have to worry about management and headaches, and you don't have to worry about the risk of fires, floods, hurricanes, tornadoes that we're seeing where it's wiping out.
Oh, yeah. It's
in
crazy.
California, for example, we've recently had some serious fires that wiped out entire towns.
And then you got the flooding,
Flooding. Yeah. I recommend also buy level flat land, not mountain
land.
And then, like we talked about, no resort land.
Right.
Because of the risk. Buy in areas that are growing and expanding. Do your homework. Hire professionals that don't cost you anything.
Right.
Read what's going on in the community. Do your homework. Get the title report. Make sure it's clean and there's no issues. Even if there's an issue, sometimes you can resolve the
sure.
title problems. And if you have a good, competent broker, he can be instrumental in clearing the title for you.
Right.
For example, I've mentioned the case about the property I tried to buy for a client, and there was a loan that wasn't paid off. We cleared it up. It took some time,
sure,
but I put my time and effort into it. Someone that doesn't know what they're doing would not know how to go about doing
right.
that.
And wasted everybody's time.
Yeah.
And get people upset and say, no, I don't want to ever do this again. I don't want to go through this, when they could have had a pleasant experience if they were working with the right person.
If you see a property with a lot of challenges and hair on it, walk away from
right.
it. Don't. It's not worth it.
Sure. There's always stuff out there.
Yeah, there's always another deal. That's
exactly.
a very good point you
exactly.
brought up, Lou. If you think you're getting a great deal and you're going to miss it, there's always another deal.
Right.
Give it time and you will find it. There's always opportunities. Now, here's another strategy, personal strategy. Always find out why a seller is selling. Find out if they're a motivated seller. If they're a motivated seller, they'll take a low-ball offer. They won't
right.
get upset and insulted. If they're not motivated, if you give them a low-ball offer, they'll get upset and insulted and mad, and you'll have a horrible relationship.
Right.
Someone that's motivated, someone that's getting divorced, someone that's got tax problems, someone that inherited property, don't want it, they will take low-ball offers, and they'll be happy to take it with you.
So, winding down here, how do people get in touch with you? How do they get it?
Well, my phone number is 714-356-7823. My personal email is wh@calcp.com.
Do that again, okay? But I'm going to put it on the website. I won't put your phone number, but on our guest section of the website.
So my personal
I'll put
email
you.
Is
wh@calcp.com.
That stands for California Commercial Properties.
Wow, I like that. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure having you today. We've been friends for a long time and been wanting to get you on the show. And we really appreciate the subject and the information that you shared with us today. Thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any guests or topics you'd like to suggest, we'd appreciate them. All questions are welcomed, and all of our guests may be emailed, as I mentioned, with your questions or concerns as well. The show is for the public, and most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source for land education. All of our shows are broadcast on Saturday on WKTE 1090, which has simple apps, and it's also downloaded on my website, letstalkland.net, Podbeam, Spotify, Facebook, YouTube, and more. My email is lou@mylandpro.com. My cell is 336-669-1405. Now it's time for Dr. Barbie's Ask the Doctor. Thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Yes.